Tonight, we're going to dive into the mind of David Wilcox, some believe is the reincarnated American prophet, Edgar Cayce. And we'll talk with David about the possibility of evidence to support a design universe, what will happen in 2012, and human appearance of alien life on Earth. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, fascinating night in store for you tonight at Coast to Coast AM. David Wilcox, professional intuitive consultant, who since 1993 has intensively researched ufology, ancient civilizations, consciousness science, new paradigms of matter energy. He is the author of a critically acclaimed trilogy of scientific research works known as the Convergence series, which gives definitive support to the idea that a change in matter, energy, and consciousness is now occurring on planet Earth and throughout the solar system. Tonight, David Wilcox. Well, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, George?
Good, good. Lots of folks had requested you to come back as early into 2009 as possible, David. So I'm fulfilling my pledge to them, and here
well,
you are.
I guess it doesn't get earlier than this, huh? This is the first show of the year.
Really? Really? What's new? What's new since we last saw each other at one of the conferences?
Well, yeah, that's right. You and I were at the Conscious Life Expo last year. We were on that panel about 2012.
Yep.
And since that time, the big thing has been that I'm working on an album called Wander Awakening, which is actually featuring me as a lead singer.
Come on, you're kidding me.
No, this is totally for real.
Are you a good singer?
Actually, yes. The surprising thing is how good of a quality we've actually gotten. It's basically,
you've got to get me a clip of this later, okay?
Yeah, we're still in the phase where we're doing rough mixes, but we've had a lot of people listen to it, and they really, really like how it's sounding. We may be able to have something good enough for the next time, because Tom was just telling me that we might be doing a show again in the near future, so maybe that time we'll be able to play something.
Just promise me that Tom is not the backup singer. Can you promise me that?
That might have been how I got him to get me back on the air, though.
All right, Dave, lots to talk with you about. I mean, lots to talk with you about. Things are changing on this planet faster than we can keep up with it. We were just talking with Mitch Batros about the possibility of Yellowstone going. He's not too concerned yet, but we're all going to watch the signs and symptoms. And then, you know, later on in the show, I just want to talk with you a little bit more about Edgar Cayce, because I'm still fascinated with his life in the fact that so many people believe that you could be the reincarnated Edgar Cayce. But let's get into, you know, this vastness of space for just a moment. What is your, you know, here's the one thing I get about you wherever I go or the emails I get. People, when they're in your lectures, and I've seen them face to face, are in awe. You've got that Richard Hoagland-esque about you in front of an audience, and they sit back, their eyes are open, and they just listen. So I guess to start this, when you talk about the vastness of the universe, what do you think about that? What's going through your mind?
Well, I think we're heading into a period in history where we can no longer turn our backs on the wisdom of ancient and indigenous people insofar as the cosmic concept that intelligence is not just something that's a function of human life and life forms on Earth, but that intelligence is an intrinsic quality of energy, space, and time itself. And every ancient tradition, including Christianity and all the world religions, essentially come back to a monotheistic concept in the end. They may have pantheism insofar as they see hierarchical structures of life beyond the level that we're at now. But I think all philosophies of any lasting impact end up coming back to this idea that there's only one creator. And it's basically a dream that the universe is having of duality, separation, space, and time. And in fact, everything resolves to singularity, and there is only identity, and the identity is a one consciousness. So then from there, you get into the idea that everything that is manifest, everything that we see around us, is actually part of this dream that we're having. And if we can remember who we truly are, then we penetrate that veil that makes us think that when we look at another person that we're looking at someone else. And as we like to say, the catchphrase is, there's only one of us here.
Now, with our narrow eyes, you know, we're looking out into the vastness of space, but we see things in the Milky Way galaxy.
Right.
Do you believe that this galaxy is a carbon copy of what's out there in the universe, or are we truly unique here?
Well, the terms that you're using are a little bit lacking in specificity, but I would say insofar as the creator is holographic and fractal, then yeah, in one sense we are a carbon copy insofar as it's the same pattern that keeps reiterating. But then we have all the uniqueness of a particular snowflake as well because of the richness with which each galaxy, in this cosmic conception that I'm working with, each galaxy has a personality and gets to design a curriculum for evolution, including the exact nature of the spiritual archetypes that everybody goes through. There's apparently seven archetypes of body, seven of mind, and seven of spirit, and then one that ties them all together called the fool or the seeker of truth. And these experiences that we have are written into the fabric of creation, basically. It's like you're only going to have 22 experiences, more or less, and then the whole way in which you go through the course of your evolution and destiny has to do with how you navigate these 22 experiences. And a lot of people will just keep getting stuck on one or two and keep repeating that over and over again. But you can find the templates of all 22 experiences in the tarot cards, the 22 major arcana, including things like the Tower of Destruction, the Devil, the Moon, the Sun, the Magician. All those various cards that people have seen so many times represent the major archetypes of evolution that we go through as souls.
And how are they able to depict them? I mean, how do they know about this, those creators, let's say, of tarot cards?
Well, supposedly, the tarot cards go back to 10, 11,000 years ago during the time of Atlantis, when we are told there was an extraterrestrial contact with people at that time. And this contact actually formed the core of the secret material that's now jealously guarded by groups such as the New World Order and the Illuminati. There was an actual contact that led to the construction of the Great Pyramid. And when you tie in the Casey story, of course, Casey said that one of his past lives was the Atlantean priest Rata, who was responsible for liaising with this extraterrestrial group to build the pyramid. And so in that sense, when you get into the idea of there being a hall of records and so forth, that's another Casey concept in which that lifetime he had as Rata, he was working with this extraterrestrial group, which is called Ra, and is the name that we get those Egyptian words from. And they gave us a great deal of information, most of which has still remained the provenance of highly secret rituals and societies that you don't even get to access this stuff until you're very high ranking in those groups. They would protect the secrets under pain of death. Because ultimately what you're dealing with is that the Great Pyramid was built to be a chamber of initiation that would create an ascended state for the person who successfully went through it. You would go up in there, lie in the sarcophagus, and there would be a healer in there who had a specific tuned crystal, and you would go through this experience of facing your own shadow as if it was projected in front of you like some sort of demonic caricature. And this is such a terrifying experience, and it goes on for so long that many people were risking death by doing it, because you could actually die of fear of facing this aspect of yourself. But if you successfully passed this initiation, then you got out of the pyramid with these very highly advanced abilities. And so it became a philosophy of deism in which man becomes God. And they have kept those rituals and religions very secretive because they don't want the average person to have the knowledge that you can transcend an ordinary human life and have these extraordinary capabilities.
Why don't they want to give us these capabilities, David? What is so important to them to keep their thumbs on us?
Well, if you read the history of what these kind of ascended beings used to be able to do, according to a book by Philos the Tibetan called Dweller on Two Planets, which according to the Edgar Cayce readings was accurate, Philos the Tibetan was channeled by some little illiterate boy in the early or late 1800s, I believe. And he described somebody who went through this initiation successfully who turned out to be evil. Now imagine this guy having an entire army coming up to chase him down, and his power is so vast that he's standing on top of a hill, and you have thousands of soldiers running towards him, and he just points his finger at him, and just by waving his finger across, they all fall down dead. And then once the bodies have died, he reanimates them and gets them all to walk into the river and dispose of themselves. So this is a very terrifying power, and apparently the ancient mystery schools were afraid that if an average person gained these powers, that they would use them for purposes of self-gratification, and therefore it was believed that you couldn't trust anybody, just anybody, to go through this, because what if he passes the initiation? What if he makes it through the pyramid and is able to do this stuff, and then nobody can go up against him? That's the original rationale. Now, of course, the extraterrestrial beings that gave us this technology never intended for us to have such a negative viewpoint of it, because if you think about it from another perspective, all it takes is more than one person who've been through this at the same time, and the positive is going to be able to nullify the effect of one rogue who happens to go negative. But it's since gotten contorted dramatically. That's another important point. The initial philosophy that was given to the Egyptians did deal with the concept of the yin-yang of positive and negative force in the universe and how those two opposites clash against each other to create spiritual evolution. Whereas now our current Illuminati types have kind of distorted that philosophy to the idea that they have to experience the extremes of both positive and negative behavior in order to be the most spiritually evolved. So they will simultaneously be giving large amounts of money to philanthropic organizations and humanitarian relief efforts, while at the same time engaging in very nefarious activity.
Well, I got to tell you, based on just the things I'm seeing right now about this control, it wouldn't surprise me that they'd want to keep this a secret from the masses, David. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
Well, look at the latest Batman movie and the incredible power that you see the Joker character have in that movie. Of course, yeah. It's a fictional story. He's an archetype. He's not really a real person. But the Joker is like Bin Laden times 1,000, you know. Well, the fear was that if you get somebody that has access to these ancient teachings and gains these powers, you know, what he could do would make the Joker look like a joke by comparison. So I understand the rationale. And the problem is, however, that they have been so protective of these secrets that we don't even have the first stages of the knowledge that they've gained. And that includes the obvious fact that there has been a so-called hidden directorate of extraterrestrial intelligence that has been working with humanity ever since we even were born on this planet in order to steer our evolution in a direction which will promote the highest growth for humanity. And I don't believe that all of the stuff that's going on in these secret organizations is negative. I've spoken to many of these whistleblowers and witnesses myself, and there are a lot of good people in these groups. In fact, one witness, Henry Deacon, is one of the most high-ranking people I've ever spoken to. He was never exposed to any sort of Luciferian or Illuminati philosophy at all.
Tell us about Henry Deacon, David.
Well, Henry Deacon is a fascinating case. Because I first found out about him through him being interviewed by Project Camelot, which is Bill Ryan and Kerry Cassidy. And they have a series of videos out on the internet, which you can watch. But they never were able to get this guy on video. He was too afraid to speak on camera. But when I started to read his testimony, he was giving them some information that was very highly advanced, which included things that were pieces of testimony I had heard from other witnesses, such as my contact Daniel, who apparently worked on the Montauk Project. And I had never heard anyone go public with this stuff, and I certainly hadn't, and yet this guy had all of those specific data points and more that I knew were already accurate because I'd heard them from other witnesses. So it took actually about 2 years before I was able to get to speak to Henry Deacon myself. But one of the things that I wanted us to be able to talk about tonight, and I wrote on my website the article about, is Deacon's testimony regarding things like stargates and the idea that there are at least 40, 45 different species of human being that he actually personally met and interacted with in the course of working in a variety of compartmentalized projects. To me, this is just so fascinating that it boggles my mind.
And you believe he's credible?
I absolutely believe he is. In fact, I spoke with him on the phone for, I don't know. I mean, we've probably spoken some 60, 70 hours on the phone. And during that time, there was one case where he got called on his cell phone from one of these black ops agencies offering him a job. And he put it on speakerphone, and I witnessed the entire conversation. And I heard how evasive this guy was. You could tell he was old school military the whole way he handled it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this sort of good old boy energy about the way they were talking. Because apparently there's only a small number of people who get to a level where once you've worked in enough compartments of these compartmentalized projects, they basically let you in on everything. And then you're in very high demand because they will hire you on from one project to another. And they know that they can trust you, and they know that you're not going to spill the beans, so to speak. So, you know, the amount of information that he's given me is quite vast. It's more bang for the buck than any other witness I've ever spoken to.
In your take on Stargate technology, you believe that it exists?
Oh, no doubt about it. You have to realize that the Philadelphia experiment was a real thing. If you check out some of the history that goes into that, it actually was discovered, the effect that led to the Philadelphia experiment was discovered by the Navy when they were using high-intensity electromagnetic arc welding to make battleships. And apparently there's a certain point of energy intensity that you reach just with ordinary electromagnetic energy where you basically sort of fold space in on itself. And it curls over into itself, and you get this sort of wormhole effect.
Mm-hmm.
And they were having tools disappear from the room. There would be a black spot that would appear in the room, and then all the power would go off. And when they would get the power back on, tools would be missing. And so they ended up filming this and discovered that when they did the weld at these very high levels of energy, this black hole would appear, and it would suck things into it. So then they modified that technology into coils that they could put around a battleship, which was, according to Colonel Philip Corso, it was not the USS Eldridge. That was a cover story. It was actually a minesweeper ship called IX-97. So that's why when people have investigated the Philadelphia experiment and they look for the crew of the Eldridge, that, you know, the crew says nothing bad happened because it was never the Eldridge. But IX-97 is the ship that this actually did happen to. All they were looking for was optical invisibility. But then when they turned the juice on, they had very unexpected results in that the ship actually jumped from one location to another and then came back. It went from Norfolk.
Which they didn't expect. David, we're going to talk more with you about that
Sure. When
we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. By the way, while I was on vacation last week, I hit the milestone of 6 years now, full-time, at Coast to Coast AM, and I wanted to thank all of you for supporting the program and keeping it what it is today. We'll be back in a moment. David Wilcock, our special guest. We're going to dive more into his mind on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, David Wilcock, our special guest tonight. David, let's go back to the star systems for a moment, the Stargate systems, and this is going to be one of those fascinating programs, especially as we talk a little bit more about Henry Deacon and things that he told you he saw. William Henry always talked about ancient Stargate systems. Are they different from these modern ones?
Absolutely and totally different, yeah. The ancient Stargate system is much more crude and quite dangerous for you to go through. This is a large subject. Some of this stuff I heard about from another witness who I call Daniel, and that's the guy I talk about on my 2012 Enigma video, which was number one on Google on December 1st, so it's really gotten popular.
Well, good for you. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And Daniel, I had an extensive amount of conversation with, and he was the first person to tell me about this ancient Stargate system. Now, the problem with this kind of stuff is that each of these guys gets different pieces of the puzzle, and not all of them get the same pieces. So you have to take a little bit from one and a little bit from another to put it all together. But according to Daniel's testimony, the knowledge that he was given, well, he worked at Montauk, which was actually called Phoenix 3, the technical name it was given.
Right.
Said that there was an ancient race of beings called the Ancients, kind of uninteresting name, but that was what they were called. And this is the same race that is, in the Stargate program they refer to as the Ancients. And these guys came to the Earth before people were here and basically set up the game. And this includes apparently very large underground cities and a Stargate network, which is not just on Earth, but it's extended throughout at least our entire galaxy and possibly many others as well.
Now, these visitors, is this beyond the Sitchin Anunnaki research?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, when you start talking to the guys who really know what's going on, it's a lot more than most of the people that whistleblowers ever talk about get into. I mean,
all right.
We're talking about the Anunnaki represent one race of ETs, of which there are, according to Sergeant Clifford Stone, there's some 57 different varieties of human being in one form or another that have visited us. But these
of which the Anunnaki could have been one of them, right?
Yeah, yeah. The Anunnaki are about 14 feet tall. They wear this kind of reddish-black armor with sort of a gold filigree on it. They wear masks. They don't let you see their face. When they come in and have a meeting with you, they will not sit down. They stand, which is very intimidating. They're highly telepathic, so they can read your thoughts. They can get into your mind and make you think things that you wouldn't think. And they're really not very respectful towards human beings. They see us as property, and the dealings that we've had with them on a governmental level have not been all that favorable to us. In fact, the problem is that they chose to work with the Germans during the time that the Nazi Party was coming into power. And according to Henry Deacon, the original meeting was set up for the Himalayan mountains. That was where the rendezvous took place with the Anunnaki. And there was some sort of limited agreement to share technology with them in exchange for assisting them in such things as developing a base in Antarctica and so forth. And what ended up happening was that apparently the deal fell through, Deacon is not clear as to the details, but we do still have a limited partnership with the Anunnaki, but it's not, it remains somewhat tense, let's put it that way.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a second. So why would the ancient Stargate systems, and again, some of those that Henry, for example, talks about, William Henry, why would those ancient Stargate systems be dangerous?
Well, Henry Deacon describes a process in which you go through a wormhole, which is very similar to what happened to Jodie Foster at the end of the movie Contact. In fact,
right. Okay.
That whole sequence is totally based on what an ancient Stargate is actually like. These ancient Stargate systems do not allow anything but biological material to go through. That's another thing. When you come out the other side, if you tried to bring something with you that was not a living thing, it would have disintegrated.
Like your craft, for example, if you were sitting in something?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's true. So, it's funny because according to Daniel's testimony, he said that they were sending people through the ancient gate network, and when they'd go out the other side, their pants would fall down. Because the elastic on your pants was an inorganic material, enough so that it wouldn't make it through the gate.
That's funny.
So they had to give these guys these cotton drawstring pants or else their pants would fall down.
That's funny.
So the ancient one of the things you got to understand about Stargate travel too is that it requires a certain degree of spiritual stability that most of us on this planet don't have. So when Henry Deacon is using the modern gate network, first of all, the modern gate network doesn't require any travel time. You don't feel this experience of going through a wormhole. You're not having this visual and kinesthetic experience of traveling through some sort of other dimension. You literally go from point A to point B instantaneously, and they've also worked out the kinks so that you can bring matter with you. It's not just life that goes through. The ancient gate system was designed so that you couldn't bring something through that would harm the life on the planet you go to. Basically, the intention was for these various human civilizations on various planets to be able to interact with each other in a peaceful way. And to some degree, the Stargate SG-1 television program and Stargate Atlantis has continued to emphasize that level to which the gate system was intended. But again, they have to give you a medication in order to stabilize your health to be able to use the gates. And the problem that happened to Henry Deacon was that he left his job very suddenly, and he went off this medication cold turkey. And he now has some pretty substantial health complications that have made it impossible for him to take another job like that.
Was he a traveler?
Yeah, he would basically jump over to a base on Mars. They had existing human habitations on Mars that were very ancient. And we are now told from Henry that there are some 240,000 personnel on Mars, of which only 10,000 are people that were born on Earth.
I'm beginning to realize why at conferences people sit in your lectures with their eyes open, because this is fascinating stuff, David.
Well, the problem, too, is that they take care of you. They treat you well when you get into these higher-level compartments of the black ops, and so none of these guys want to come forward. So we're very, very fortunate that Henry Deacon even exists, because, honestly, these guys keep to themselves, and they don't want to come forward because imagine there are bases all over the world in which you show up to work at this base. You go into what appears to be an ordinary looking room. The doors close behind you. And instead of just taking a trip on an elevator, you're now going to a whole other base on another planet. You can jump gate over to various large spaceships that we've built, which orbit in some cases deep space, even outside the solar system. And so they have all this technology already in existence. And it's just, it's mind-blowing when you start to realize how little most of us know.
At any point, David, did any of them, we're going to come back to all this as we talk throughout the night here, but did any of them ever talk about, as we started, this vast superintelligence in the universe, the divine creation here?
Yeah, they have a pretty good idea that there's something going on, that there's an intelligent source throughout the cosmos. In fact, Daniel, one of my witnesses, the Montauk guy,
right,
basically was describing research that they did into DNA and discovered that every person's DNA has a very specific energetic signature. And they were able to create a device that would allow you to listen for those signatures of energy on a very precise level. And what shocked them to the point that they were actually quite terrified at first was that when they turned this device out into space, they found DNA harmonics everywhere. And I mean everywhere. And they had no idea at the time that the universe was so teeming with life. But they since have discovered that basically life will form just about anywhere that it possibly can. Anywhere that you have atoms and molecules, they're going to form into little critters. And if those little critters can get some water and some sunlight and some atmosphere to protect them, then they're going to start growing, and they're going to become plants and animals and insects and birds and everything leading right up to human life.
I was going to say, can we assume that whatever life is out there on other planets, how vast out they may be, that the life is going to look somewhat similar to what's here on this planet?
That's the big secret, and that is the main thing I was hoping to achieve in tonight's show, is to break this stranglehold that we have intellectually and creatively around the idea that so-called aliens, and I don't use that word most of the time, are these malevolent, scary-looking creatures. In fact, what we can see, now don't forget, I was at Dr. Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project conference at the National Press Club on May 10th, 2001. Now, everybody came forward on May 9th, 2001. That's the video you can watch on disclosureproject.org and websites like that. There was another event called the Closed Executive Summary Briefing for VIPs and members of Congress, and that was on May 10th. And I had just been on Art's show for the first time. That was before you were there, George.
Right.
And that's how I got to be called a VIP. And I also donated like $150 to the company. So just based on those two things, I was able to get into this congressional briefing. And Sergeant Clifford Stone spoke there. And I have to say that the things he said in the closed briefing were vastly more interesting and provocative than what he said in the one from the day before that you can watch on YouTube.
Okay, he talked about the fact that the ETs were all pretty human-like.
Yeah, he did. He said that there's 57 different varieties, and they actually, tongue-in-cheek, called them the Heinz 57.
Well, you never know. Maybe that's where they got the name.
Well, this is...
I mean the Heinz company.
Say again?
Maybe the Heinz company got the name from...
There's no way to know, but what we do know is that... And he even, I mean, this when Sergeant Stone gave his testimony, he literally broke down crying at the point that he described walking up to a crashed extraterrestrial ship and seeing the ET lying there in a damaged state. He completely lost it on stage. He had to walk off the podium for a minute. He was crying, and then he had to come back on composing himself, and the whole rest of his talk, he had tears in his eyes. And this was not some sort of acting. I mean, there was no reason for him to do this unless it was a real thing he was recalling.
Why was he crying? Because he was just so awestruck?
Yeah. There's something about these people who actually know the truth. The rest of us here, we're sitting around in cyberspace and on the internet speculating whether any of this stuff is real.
Yeah.
And yet here you have people that are walking up to a crashed disc and looking into the eyes of a wounded or dying alien. I mean, you can't even imagine what that's actually like if you're actually there. There's no more doubt in your mind at that point that we're not alone in the cosmos. And in the course of Sergeant Clifford Stone's work, he was given briefing documents which gave very precise descriptions of all 57 varieties of ET so that if he came up to a crashed extraterrestrial wreckage, that he would know who he was dealing with when he got there and what kind of characteristics they had.
Now, when you're talking about 57 varieties,
right?
What does that include, for example?
Well, the thing that's the difference between Sergeant Stone and Henry Deacon is that Sergeant Stone read about these guys in a book and had some limited interaction with some of them. Henry Deacon, in the course of going over to this base on Mars via the jump room system, this Stargate technology, he was actually working with them, sitting down with them in the same room and having meetings about various projects that they were developing in concert with our black ops guys here. So what we know from Henry Deacon is really the most substantial information. We know that the heights range from a foot and a half tall, and this is not a foot and a half tall looking like a little person that we would see on Earth. This is a foot and a half tall proportional human body to what our bodies look like. They go all the way up to 15 feet tall. Every type of skin color you can imagine has been seen. In fact, Sergeant Stone refers to a group called the Orange, and there's other testimonies that refer to an orange group. There's actually Alpha Centauri, which is the closest star to us. It's a three-star system. Has two different types of human civilization on the planets around it, according to Henry Deacon. There's a desert planet which has people that are about 5 feet tall that look like your typical Mesoamerican people, like Latinos.
Okay.
But then there's two other planets which are more lush tropical vegetation. And I know this is going to probably maybe strain credulity to the breaking point, but apparently these people photosynthesize light through their skin and thus have a dark green skin color.
almost plant-like then.
Yeah, they actually do seem to be some sort of human-vegetable hybrid. And they apparently, he said, you only ever meet women from this planet, that he never met a single man from this planet. And the women are extremely beautiful. They look like Greek or Mediterranean women on Earth. They have long black hair, penetrating dark eyes. And other than the green skin, they look like supermodel women on Earth. Same height, same proportions, you know. And the other thing about these people is that they're almost all telepathic. They can use their mouths to speak, but most of them don't. And they're apparently quite well versed in a variety of languages, but they primarily use telepathy as their means of communication. I mean, I know so much about this. You can just ask me anything. There's so
now,
much.
Well, now, what about the alien grays, though, that we hear so much about?
Well, they
are they robots, as I suspect?
Yeah, there's various testimonies which are credible, talking about programmable life forms or PLFs. And apparently, according to Dr. Stephen Greer in his most recent book, Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge, from credible whistleblowers, he says that our own black ops guys have been given the technology to build PLFs themselves. And what you are essentially dealing with there is where you can grow a life form that has a limited consciousness but is not really a sovereign being in its own right. It's more like a programmable robot. And some of the grays fall into that category. When you're looking at a gray physiology, in some cases what you seem to be looking at is a neonate, which is basically the fetal stage of a human life form but then grown to adulthood, maintaining the proportions of the fetus. And that's why you get such a thin body and such a large head. That head obviously couldn't pass through a human birth canal. So these are beings that are grown. They're no longer being born naturally. But another thing that people don't realize is that the eyes on these beings, the reason why they're black is because that's actually a lens that pops over the eyeball. And if you take the lens off, you do have a more human-like eye underneath. The only thing is that it has very severe conjunctivitis, as we would think of it. The whites of the eyes are totally, totally bloodshot.
Okay, but why the lens? What's the necessity for that?
Well, first of all, it protects their eyes because their eyes are very sensitive to light, and it apparently has super advanced technology in it, which allows you to have kind of like a virtual reality interactive system that works with various handheld devices that you can hold on to. So you have kind of like a heads-up display, and you just pop this contact lens onto your eye. So you get ultraviolet light protection, it protects the sensitivity of your eye, and it also acts as an interface.
Website still, divinecosmos.com?
That's correct.
David, when we come back, let's talk about these 57 varieties of, I guess we can't call them human, but human-like creatures throughout the universe.
Henry calls them people.
All right. We'll talk about them and what they believe in terms of that divine creator. We'll be back.